November.
Le November.
I don't know what that song is.
That song, there's a group called Fabulon.
I don't know what that is either.
They're the only reason they're remotely memorable is it's the band that Jason Faulkner was in pre-Jellyfish.
Okay.
And that was a song called In the Mood, which, or In a Mood, which I got stuck in my head because you were earlier referring to somebody we know as being in a mood. And there it was. So this is Linoleum Knife.
That's great.
Which
That's
is a great story.
It is a program about movies.
It's a podcast about movies.
Where we talk about them.
Where we talk about movies. Alonzo Duralde is the person who chose a band named Fabulon for you. He is the film critic for The Wrap, the WRAP.com, and he's also a visual internet personality on What the Flick, which you can see on YouTube. And he has also written a book that is called Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas, which I will threaten you to buy at the end of this program.
They don't need to be threatened.
No, they do.
It's a good book.
They do.
If I do say so myself.
Tough love.
And you are Dave White, film critic for Movies.com, and in a non-movie reviewing capacity, a contributor to Slake Magazine and KCRW's Unfictional.
Yeah.
We're in a pancake coma today, aren't we?
No, I'm not.
Really?
I'm kind of wide awake.
Okay. It's feeling a little mellow in
here. I figured out what
so.
It was. I figured out why I am not in a pancake coma this afternoon.
Why is that?
I only ate two pancakes.
You ate only two pancakes.
I ate only two pancakes.
I ate
like seven pieces of bacon, but I ate only two pancakes. And it's the pancakes that really do you in.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about caloric content or fat carbs or any of that stupid stuff. I'm talking about making you very sleepy when you're done eating them because they're so delicious, and you keep eating them, you forget that in your belly, they act as a kind of Ambien. And
it's a pillow.
People really, I've been told this so many times by people who eat pancakes I make, that when they are done eating them, all they can do is go home and have a nap. Which is perfect.
I have taken many post-pancake naps. Well, it's like the tryptophan myth. You know, people always said that.
Is that a myth?
Oh well, yeah. There are trace amounts of tryptophan in turkey, but the reason that you fall asleep after Thanksgiving dinner is because
stuffed your gullet.
You're stuffed with starch and booze.
Yeah.
The turkey is irrelevant. A lot of people, you know, have wine
they'll have
some cocktails
on Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Please, you of all people should know from your background. I guess every day is Thanksgiving
every day is
when
Thanksgiving.
You're with an alcoholic, right?
Every day is Thanksgiving. by that logic, yeah. I mean, we were celebrating all the time in my house.
People tend to tipple a bit. You know, it's a holiday.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I've only ever spent Thanksgiving with my family or your family. And in my family, it's the same as every other day. And in your family, it's, you know, a gang of rational-minded people who are sipping wine and talking about how I detect hints of chocolate.
Oh,
in
come
this.
On. They don't do that. No. Don't make it sound like every meal is people rolling their eyes
in
their head.
I am being unfair.
And looking for woody undertones.
I am being unfair.
They had an actual wine tasting once.
This is a thing that happened once.
That they foolishly invited you to be a part of.
Here's what happened. We were at Thanksgiving with his family. And by the way, for y'all who don't know this, right? This family, they're unnaturally happy. This is a group of people who, first of all, they all have college educations, which you don't know how that feels. And they're all kind, you know, they read books, they have hobbies, they're nice, they're talkative, they have intelligent conversations about things. And so we're at Thanksgiving with his family, and like, I guess it was like the night after or the night before.
It wasn't actually.
It was like Friday night after Thanksgiving. His brothers, they have all this wine. They have all, like, a lot of, you know, fancy wines.
Well, they planned to have a tasting. Like, it was
right,
like
and they
thing
planned to have a tasting. Well, they also had this thing where they were like, everyone write down what you taste in the thing. And I was like, I taste wine. I'm so stupid that I don't, and my mouth, my
your palate,
my wine palate is so unsophisticated that I can't tell you what's what. But at one point during the wine tasting, someone said something about, well, I detect the hint of chocolate or something like that. And I sat there at the table trying to stifle my laughter because A, it would have been insulting to them, and B, it would have only just shown me to
be
the
joke's on you,
a boob because I'm a dummy. And so,
I mean, look, I'm with you. I'm, for the most part, as far as wine is concerned, I'm kind of.
And I remember you sitting across the table looking at me like, behave. And I totally did.
I was not participating in this tasting, but I was keeping an eye on you.
I did behave.
I tend to operate in a binary of I like it, I don't like it.
Right.
But I could not tell you if, you know, is it the tannins or the, you know, the sulfites or the whatever I'm supposed to be noting in wine. And I'm sure if we, you know, if we took a class or something, like, it would walk us through it, we would be surprised.
No. It's basically,
if
we ever,
you know, spent a weekend in wine country. Or something like that.
Yes. No, it's basically, if someone said to me, well, what's the difference between Hu Xiaoxian and Chai Ming Lang?
Right.
I'd be like, well, this guy does this and this guy does this and this. I mean, they're both awesome filmmakers. But here's how they...
Are they both the gay or just one of them?
Just Chai Ming Lang.
Okay.
He's a gay.
Not Hu Xiaoxian?
To my knowledge... Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like I've met him or asked him or anything. But, I mean,
I would quote Tallulah Bankhead, but this is a clean podcast.
It's kind of a running thing in Chai Ming Lang films where, you know, there's usually, well, not usually, but sometimes there are gay characters.
Right.
Who end up in the most uncomfortable situations. And so, anyway, I'm a big fan of these filmmakers, but... Someone who's never seen any of their films before and has to watch one and then watch another would be like, well, I don't... Yeah. So that's me and wine.
Fair enough.
The end of that story. I'm not fancy about wine.
I know what I like.
I know what I like. I am, however, fancy about the most recent wave of Asian filmmakers.
Mm. And so, teas. You're fancy about teas.
Fancy about teas. I know that. Yeah.
You know an oolong from a Lapsang Soochow.
I do, yes.
Which I do not, but...
I was just told yesterday by a person whose opinion I respect on many things that I have great taste in art.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true. I do.
You're going to be coasting on that one for years.
And, so what were we talking about?
We're
going to start talking about some movies because we don't have a lot of time today.
Okay, fine.
We are not, this is not a 90-minute show. This is not even a 75-minute show.
All right.
I got to get dinner in
the oven. There's only a few movies this week, so we can power through it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Biggie this week, of course, is Skyfall.
I don't pay any real attention to box office. Like, I don't follow it like baseball stats.
Mm-hmm.
It actually sort of holds no interest for me at all, the box office stuff. I'm often surprised when a film that I'm really into makes like 35 cents at the box office. Then I'm a little bummed for that movie because I was like, well, I thought, you know, people, you know, why can't people acknowledge that this is a really cool movie and how come nobody went to see it?
I hate being asked to do box office picks. And I hate it when somebody says, oh, do you think so-and-so is going to win the Oscar? I do not care about either, frankly. I mean, I kind of follow the box office stuff just because I get the emails in my box all weekend telling me how things are going. And it's kind of like, oh, well, that's...
Yeah, that's the only reason
I
know.
But I don't seek it out. You know?
Like, the only reason I know how much money things make is that you'll yell at me across the apartment and be like, guess what made a blah, lot of money, real man? And I'll say, I don't care. And then you tell me. And then I forget.
You don't always say you don't care.
And then I forget.
Sometimes you enable this kind of thing.
Sometimes I do enable. Sometimes I'll be like, what? Yes, tell me. Tell me the thing.
Yes, you bowl me over with your enthusiasm. Anyway, so what were we going to say about Skyfall's box office?
It made a lot of it.
It did.
So many box offices.
So many ducats.
Burning down and that the wickets. That is appropriate because Skyfall is terrific.
It is real good.
And by the time you listen to this, you probably already know that it's terrific.
Yes.
It is my very favorite of the Daniel Craig Bond films. The three.
I'm with you on that.
Although I've enjoyed all three.
Yeah, I didn't hate Quantum of Solace.
I even enjoyed Quantum of Solace.
It's like suddenly everybody's like, so much better than Quantum of Solace.
I know. Like, we're suddenly supposed to all go Quantum of Solace, which is not.
Was okay with it.
No, I'm going to say, you know, like one of my very favorite Bond movies, period.
Ditto.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't care about Pierce Brosnan Bond. I don't care about Timothy Dalton Bond. My very favorites are obviously Sean Connery and the Roger Moore Bonds. The Roger Moore Bonds are exceptionally silly, and they have that whole sort of film of 70s sleaziness and permissiveness all over them. But those were the ones I first saw in a theater in their initial release.
Yeah, those were formative Bonds.
The Man with the Golden Gun was the first one I ever saw when I was a kid. It was rated PG, and I was, I don't know, 8 or 9, and it was playing at a matinee on a weekend, and I was like, I want to go to this movie. Like, at this point, I had already been obsessed with movies as a little kid for so long that there came a moment where my parents just stopped asking me what I was going to go see. I just said, will you take me to the movies? And they would drive me, they would drop me off, and they would pick me up again when it was over 2 hours later. And I started, like, if it wasn't, you know, one of the kiddie matinees that were, like, films designed specifically for the kid audience, I would just sort of conveniently not tell them that. Or if I was super lucky, because, you know, there was always that risk of, even though it was a PG movie, because this was back in the day when PG covered a lot of territory.
Right.
PG was anything that wasn't a cartoon for babies.
Or an R-rated
movie. So you would see a whole lot of a grown-up stuff in a PG movie back in the 70s. And so all the sexy stuff and all the violence.
And the cussing.
And the cussing in the James Bond movies, that was a PG movie. And any kid with the price of admission could walk into a PG movie. They didn't like, turn you away.
No.
And so I was especially lucky that we had one of the very first twin cinemas in our town.
Mm.
And, the next town over.
Right.
We didn't have any movie theaters in my town. It was all the next town over. But as you remember from last summer, getting from one town to the next in New England is like...
It's a trek.
It's not a trek. It's a, now we're in the next town.
Oh, well, that's true.
Like,
yeah.
Boom, here we are.
There's a long highway or whatever those
were. And, so it's not like it was this big drive. It was like 15 minutes. And so, but we had the Jerry Lewis twin in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. And so on one side would be, you know, the kiddie movie, which I had already seen 3 times. You know, they were showing The Wilderness Family again. Right. Again.
You'd go over to Theater 2 to see Doctor's Wives or something.
Yeah, exactly. And so whatever was in the other theater, the grown-up.
Something with Diane Cannon
in it. The PG movie, yeah. Yeah, and so I wound up at Man with the Golden Gun, where the villain had like 3 nipples. You know, like that's a man.
Yeah, but it's a dude.
Man with 3 nipples, and I just thought that was the kinkiest thing I'd ever seen in my tiny child life.
I always have a tale of heartbreak when people share their first Bond stories, because I was all set to go see The Spy Who Loved Me, and my oldest brother, and here's the thing about being a youngest child, where your oldest brothers are quite a bit older than you, it's like having extra parents.
Yeah, yeah.
Extra eyes and ears, and they're more clued into things. You can't fool them the way you can fool your parents sometimes.
Yeah.
My oldest brother told my parents that Spy Who Loved Me was too racy for me.
Yeah.
So my first Bond movie in the theater was Moonraker.
Bah.
So thanks, Fernando.
Yeah, my older brother burned me real hard when he got older, because the older he got, he assumed the role of parent often in my family.
And he found Jesus.
And he was born again. And so that became this other obstacle, because suddenly many things were no longer appropriate.
Right.
And his rules for his life became the rules for
everybody else's.
Yeah, everyone else's. And so I remember being forbidden to see Tommy. And I was obsessed with the idea of seeing it.
Right.
Like, I had the movie soundtrack album, and I was not allowed to see the movie.
Mm.
And the trailer, if you go online and you look at the trailer for Tommy, we'll post it. It is
a freak out.
It is a freak out, and one of the most seductive trailers, because not only was Ken Russell this like insane visual stylist, but the trailer for this specific movie announced it as a very special event that was coming to theaters near you, and it was very
in quadraphonic sound.
Yeah, like, right? It was going to be this amazing, like, you've never experienced anything like this before in your life. And so I was salivating to go see this movie, and I was like 11. But then both of my older brothers saw it.
Put the kibosh.
And that was it. Because there's a lot of crazy
stuff.
Oh,
my God. Yeah.
There's a lot of crazy stuff in Tommy.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, all my dumb little friends are like, yeah, my big brother took me to see him. And I was like, you don't even care about movies. You just go because there's something that you don't have anything else better to do.
I know. Look,
it just drove me nuts.
My friends in fourth grade who saw Animal House when I wasn't allowed to, just killing
me. Yeah, they just were casually taken to it accidentally by irresponsible adults.
Yes!
And you.
No one was paying attention.
You are dying to see these things.
Meanwhile, my mom's reading the Parents Magazine recommendations.
And so, yeah, so that was a thing that wound up happening. But yeah, until my brother became a born-again Christian, all bets were off. I could go see anything. Mm. And if it was the Twin Cinema, I would be like, one ticket for a man with the golden gun, please.
70s PG movies were, I mean, like the Bad News Bears, like...
Filthy.
Yeah, I mean, just stuff you could not get away with. You know, even, you know, it's like, as our friend Christian always likes to point out, you know, if you can't stop the music... You can PG
There's
movie
a penis.
With penis.
There's a penis in that movie. Yes. Yeah.
All right. We should talk about Skyfall because we were as always.
Well, James Bond. There's a tremendous opening battle. Which
in Turkey,
and there's no spoiler involved in this. He is presumed to be dead.
He's running across the rooftops of Turkey in almost exactly the same place where. The daughter in Taken 2 is throwing grenades.
Pretty much.
Oddly.
Like, they don't miss each other. They don't pass by each other and wave. It's surprising. But after this battle, he is presumed dead. In fact, his presumed deadness is part of the opening credits sequence, the sort of the wavy, hazy lady sequence that Adele sings the song.
In the sky for...
It's a terrific song, too.
It is.
And she's perfect choice to sing because she is essentially Shirley Bassey right now. So it starts off, he's just kind of buggering off. Like, he's done. He's sort of like, I'm going to go to hang out at these casinos and bang some chicks. And
it's like
taking an extended vacation, and everyone else, they're burying him back in England.
Yeah, like M is writing his obit. Oddly enough, it you know, Archer is a spoof of spies.
Yeah.
Stuff, but he kind of does the Archer thing where he's thought dead and he's like growing a beard and living on an island somewhere.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about that. And so, when's Archer come back on TV anyway?
January, I think.
We have to wait that long.
Yeah.
That's the best show. Okay, so anyway, the movie. They think he's dead. He comes back, and meanwhile, when he comes back, he learns that someone is after MI6, not just specifically M.
Yeah.
And the film then starts to explore M's relationship not only with Bond, but with the person who winds up to be the internet terrorist. She describes him apparently as slippery, and I didn't realize that because it was a word I used in my review, and maybe it just sort of embedded itself in my brain, and I didn't remember that she had said it in the film. And Javier Bardem, who has one of the greatest entrance scenes of any Bond villain. Like, not only does Roger Deakins just sort of frame him as this minuscule thing that gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger in the shot, and eventually he takes over the shot and envelops you in this web of like lunacy and terror and sexual freak out, and everything about him is unsettling and funny.
Yeah. I want to mention real quick, Roger Deakins, for people who don't know, is a cinematographer. He shot like almost all the Coen Brothers movies. He is one of the masters working today. He shot Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford. You know, and he makes this, without a doubt, the best looking Bond.
It's beautiful. Ever. I want to see it again. I know you want to see it in IMAX. I'm not interested in IMAX. I want to go see it again. Just to look at it. It's so amazing to look at. And the rest of the film is Bond trying to come back up to speed. Not only has he been off his game for a while and sort of, you know, out of the picture.
He's out of shape.
For Bond, he's out of shape. I mean, for everyone else, it's, you know.
Right. He's still
We wish we were out of shape, Bond. but he is out of shape. He doesn't pass any of his physical tests. Before Judy Jett just sort of is like, yeah, okay, go back into the field. You know, like... I'll lie to you and tell you everything was fine. And he is also having to come up against the idea that the world is moving faster than he wants to move. Mm. Technology, these kids and their computers.
Yeah, like Q is now, you know, Q is now this,
yeah, Q is a 20-something smartass played by Ben Whishaw.
Yeah, in a muckluck.
Yeah, yeah, in an... An anorak. and this is a little iPad. Yeah. He's just like, yeah, whatever, man.
This is the first movie where you actually have to see M deal, not only sort of deal with the field and deal with making the tough decisions, but dealing with the government.
Yeah.
Like, she has to appear before MPs to explain what they're doing. Yeah. So like this movie, if you always wanted more Judi Dench in your Bond movies,
oh, yeah.
This is the movie. This is the one. There's absolutely a lot of Judi Dench in this movie.
And my favorite Bond girl. That's Judi Dench.
She's terrific. So it's just it's smart and it's provocative and it really it doesn't feel like it's the usual sort of like, you know, tab A into slot B Bond movie where, you know all the beats. It goes into interesting directions. It treats like M and a lot of these other, you know, supporting players like characters and gives them things to do and feel and think about. I loved it.
The way they have to I also appreciated the way that, I mean, it's a touch reactionary, the way that the characters have to contend with this very, very, very contemporary trouble. And the way they deal with it is to sort of go back in time in a way and access old style Bond pushback on the bad guys, and you guys on What the Flick described it, the ending as becoming a Western at the end, which is very true. It does, and I won't say anything more about that, but it's so much fun to watch, and even especially that M becomes involved in the pushback.
And there are elements of the film. I think, you know, this is, we've been hearing a lot this year, this is the 50th anniversary of Bond. They put out that big, you know, Blu-ray box set and everything. This movie does have the occasional little sprinkle of thing for the super fans, for the old school Bond fans, but it does not mire itself in nostalgia. If anything, it's almost like, it's like this movie is, and really all the Craig movies have kind of been this, but this one I think especially is sort of like, welcome to the pivot point to Bond.
Yeah.
To the next half century, yes. You know, to the 2.0 version, you know, that we're really going to... And by the way, you were listing all the Bonds earlier, and I have to give a shout-out to George Lazenby.
Well, yeah, he was terrific.
Because on Her Majesty's Secret Service, that's one of the best, one of my that absolute
is,
favorites.
Yeah, that's in my top five. I remember I had never seen it, and I had sort of figured that I could dismiss it because it was like this one guy who only was Bond in one movie and who cares. And then you brought it to my attention.
Mm-hmm.
Forced me to sit down and watch it, and it is so great.
Yeah,
it is, and it's got some of the most outlandish, crazy things that happen in it, and some of the most moving things that happen in a Bond movie. So yeah,
and Diana Rigg, definitely one of the best Bond girls ever.
Yeah,
and you know, Telly Savalas' Blofeld is a really good villain. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Anyway, if you haven't seen that one, check it out. But yeah, Skyfall, it's great, and again, you know, it's like there's always that discussion. You know, even more so than ever with streaming and video on demand and stuff about, you know, do I need to go see it in the theater? See this one in the theater. because oh, yes. it's so... Yeah,
don't wait for DVD.
It is gorgeous.
Go see
you
this.
You really want to look at it on the big screen.
Go see this in a theater on a very big screen.
Also opening this weekend in limited release, and it's expanding wide next week. Weekend, is Steven Spielberg's Lincoln, written by Tony Kushner, which...
I like at the end when Lincoln comes home from the war, and the boy's been waiting for Lincoln so long, and he's been hoping that Lincoln would survive the war and come home to him. And then Lincoln comes home, and they love each other so much, and the sun shines, and they...
That's War Horse. Get over War Horse. Okay. It's been a year. Let War Horse go.
I can never let War Horse go. I love War Horse so much.
You're an embarrassment. Okay, now I did not...
I don't care what you say.
I did not want to see this movie.
Me neither.
Because the trailer is like everything you... It's like if somebody was making a joke trailer of a Spielberg movie.
You know, oh, I know.
Just all the John Williams music crescendoing and the Janusz Kaminski light coming in through the windows and the people having important conversations.
Yeah.
This movie is so not that.
Yeah.
It is...
why don't you explain?
Okay. So, all right. Don't let the title fool you. It is not a biography. It is not a life story. There is no rail splitting in this movie. Mm-hmm. It is almost entirely set in January 1865. It's an interesting point where Lincoln has just been reelected. The Civil War is just about over. And he knows that before they negotiate peace with the Confederacy, they have got to get a ban on slavery into the Constitution, or else... none of this will have meant anything. So he's got this very limited period of time to make this huge switch. Not only is the opposing party not down for this, the Democrats.
Yeah.
We're talking mid-1860s Democrats. Even his own Republicans, they aren't all on board. So it's all about basically the machinations of how do we get this thing passed. Like one day somebody's going to make a movie called Obamacare. And it's going to be this interesting.
Yeah.
Because this is just, it's all about the deal making and the negotiating and the arguing. And it's written by Tony Kushner, who, you know, knows how to make unlikely material interesting and funny and vivid and human.
And he is really good at speechifying.
Yeah. If you know my taste in movies, this is a very high compliment. Lincoln reminded me a lot of 1776. Which is one of my favorite movies.
Hey, I gotta say, when you sat me down and forced me to watch 1776, you could have told me I was going to the dentist, and that would have maybe made me happier. And then I appreciated it. I looked at it through your eyes.
Mm. There are no musical numbers in Lincoln,
yeah.
But it is very much about the sort of legislative sausage-making process. But it's also about Lincoln's relationship with his family. You know, Sally Field plays Mary Todd Lincoln, and, you know, she's usually sort of written off as kind of a historical, you know, crazy old battle axe joke. But she makes the character really vivid and very much, not to the extent of like Amy Adams in The Master, but she definitely has a strong will about how things need to be and how her husband needs to make them happen.
Right.
You know, and Daniel Day-Lewis is extraordinary, and it's not one of those performances that you look at and you think, ah, this is a great performance. He disappears within the role, which is the goal, I think, which should be the goal.
Yeah, I wasn't even thinking about him.
No, not at all.
I was looking at Honest Abe.
Yeah, after a while, I stopped sort of looking for the makeup or looking for him in there, and he was Lincoln. And they make Lincoln a real guy, you know, like somebody with, you know, a grand ambitions, but also, you know, with a weakness for like lengthy anecdotes to the extent that his Secretary of War actually goes, no, you're going to tell another story.
And then he runs
storms
out of the room.
Out of the room.
During which time in the screening room, you put your hand on my leg.
I can't help it. I was just, you know, it was a felt moment.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm accused frequently, not just by my partner in life, but by my friends of being a long-winded
raconteur.
Teller of stories. I just like to put all the details in.
You do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is, I was flabbergasted at how much I enjoyed this movie. And it's got an extraordinary supporting cast. Like, every time you turn around, every time somebody new appears on screen, it's like, oh, I didn't know he was, you know.
Right.
Like, you know, there's a trio of lobbyists played by James Spader, John Hawkes, and Tim Blake Nelson.
Right.
Lee Pace is a senator, and Tommy Lee Jones is a senator.
Tommy Lee Jones is my favorite thing in the movie.
He's terrific.
He's such a mean, mean man.
Because one of the things in the trailer was like, oh my God, that wig on Tommy Lee Jones. And even that winds up being relevant to the plot.
Yeah, it's part of the plot. He is a lethal weapon in this film. He is a machine of verbal brutality. I could not have enjoyed him more.
Yeah, his tongue slices people to ribbons.
I appreciated the relevance of this film to sort of where the country is right now, with people sort of at each other's throats all the time. I mean, we're not in the middle of a civil war or anything. Obviously, that would be, you know, I'm not taking it. I'm not extending it that far.
Yeah. Tensions are running high.
I would say that we're a tense population right now with the right and the left sort of at each other's throats pretty much all the time. And
for people listening to this down the road, we're taping this five days after Obama's reelection.
Yeah.
And there are still some...
For the record, we both voted for the Muslim socialist from Kenya.
Yes.
Both of us did.
But, you know, there's a lot of butthurt from the right wing going on right now. You know, white people mourning Romney.tumblr.com is still a thing.
Yeah.
I think, and I'm sure there are many moments in American history where this sort of thing happens, but definitely, yes. I think, yeah, it's pretty easy to kind of draw parallels, and it's sort of the idea of, like, how do you cut through that stuff, and even if you don't win over everybody, how do you win over enough people to do the right thing? Again, that's why I'm saying, I think this could be this is Obamacare the movie in a lot of ways, you know? But wherever you fall politically, unless you are somebody who thinks that, you know, the South will rise again.
Unless you're Victoria Jackson.
or a closet secessionist.
Right.
You know, whatever, wherever you fall on the spectrum.
That happened in Texas this week.
Oh, again?
They're calling for secession again in Texas.
Let them.
My former home state. It's my favorite thing, honestly. When my former home state, when someone starts yelling loudly about secession and it makes the news, it makes me just love them even more. Like, it almost makes me proud to be a Texan. Like, because
they would instantly become a third world country.
There's instant craziness going on. There's always a baseline level of lunacy happening in Texas that I'm really kind of a fan of. Mm. It's the reason why I eat at the Tea Party barbecue place.
When you're back in Dallas.
When I go to Dallas, yeah. Because I like walking into that environment. I like walking into that atmosphere and being sort of the stealth, the
non-crazy person
in the blue. Yeah, it's wonderful. So, where was I going with this?
Lincoln.
I don't know. It is the most. What's the word I'm trying to find here? Mature.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Spielberg movie that I've seen in a while.
It's the first movie of his in decades that I have loved without qualification. I mean, there are a couple things I would switch.
It's for people who love words. That's
definitely
a fact.
Yes.
If you just love to listen to people just sort of orate to one another, you're gonna drink this up.
And it's a convincing oratory. I mean, like, I think people don't talk exactly the same way on the Senate floor as they do in chambers, you know. It's not one of those period films where everybody is constantly posing for a painting.
Right.
You know, I don't know. Yeah, I agree. I would have maybe ended the movie a little sooner. Like, I think we didn't have to assassinate him. I think we all know that's going to happen.
Right.
You could... That
and
colors,
then he died.
That colors the end of the film anyway. So they didn't have to go through all of that. But, yeah, I think it's great. It's probably one of my favorite movies this year, I think.
Why don't we save Starlet for next week?
I can do it really quickly.
All right, do it really quickly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Starlet is the new film from, I think, Sean Baker is his name. He previously did Take Out and The Prince of Broadway. He's mainly a TV guy. I think originally he created that show Greg the Bunny, but he's done several indies now that are really interesting kind of portraits of people who exist on the fringes of society. Prince of Broadway was about an immigrant in New York who was selling, like, bootleg purses and shoes on the street. And takeout was one day in the life of this Chinese takeout delivery guy who had to raise all this money because of a gambling debt. And this is both of those films were set in New York. This one is set in L.A. in the San Fernando Valley. But this it's a young actress and with a dog named Starlet, and she buys a bunch of stuff at garage sales, and one of the things happens to be this thermos that has all this money in it. And she tries to return it to the old lady that she bought it from, but the old lady's like, no refunds, you know, and doesn't want to deal with her. So she goes on like one shopping spree, but then starts feeling guilty about it. So she starts kind of trying to insinuate herself into the old lady's life. You know, she's like show up places like at the grocery store or bingo. And at first the lady is suspicious to the point where she maces her. But the two of them wind up kind of forming this interesting friendship, and the more you get to know them, the more you sort of see the void that each fills in the other's life. It's not Tuesdays with Maury. It's not Goopy. They're both kind of keeping secrets from each other and the audience that kind of are revealed as things go along. And you find out, you know, I don't want to give away too much, but it's super, super well acted. The young woman is played by Dree Hemingway, who is the daughter of Marielle, and thus, I guess, the great-granddaughter of Ernest. And I don't have the old lady's name in front of me, but it's her first film. She'd never acted in a movie before.
Do we know where she came from?
Originally wanted a stunt cast like an aging star, but instead they wound up casting this woman. Apparently her father acted in silent films, and like I think a producer found her at a YWCA, literally, according to the episodes.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. But she's terrific. It's a really good movie. It's shot really well. He really gets the sort of sun-baked aspect of L.A. as much as he gets the sort of wintry grit of New York. It's a terrific movie. Really well acted. People should totally look for it. It's not showing on a ton of screens, but look for Starlet. It's great.
Yeah, I mean, if you need more recommendations, I have not seen this film yet, but we were just talking to our pal, Manola Dargis,
yes,
recently, and she was equally enthusiastic,
yes,
about it. And if she likes something, then you can take that to the bank.
Yeah.
We are sometimes wrong, but she is not.
And mark your calendars, well, since you brought her up. We have recorded with Manola a special episode that is airing on Thanksgiving week. It is about holiday movies.
Our Christmas movie episode.
Christmas launch episode. And we are so excited that she did the show. And so that's going to be going up. We're going to be out of town Thanksgiving week, but we're going to put it up as usual on Sunday.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving weekend.
A real film critic guested on our site.
Show. Come on. We've had a lot of real
I'm kidding.
Yeah. But no, we're super thrilled to have someone of Manola's stature do this.
I've just insulted like half a dozen of our friends.
I was going to say, yeah, that's no. But
they could take a joke.
She, yes,
they know.
You know, to have her on this,
you're all wonderful.
This rinky-dink puppet show, we're very thrilled. So be on the lookout for that later this month. Okay, letters, or do you want to do DVDs first?
The DVD recommendation I have for this week is Jean-Luc Godard's Weekend. Mm-hmm. It's now out on a Criterion disc.
It's coming out this Tuesday.
The Criterion disc has special features, video essays and interviews, and excerpts from French television about Godard at the time. So much awesome stuff. And this movie is brilliant. It's one of my favorite Godard films. It's about a couple who are traveling across the French countryside. They are
to shake up a relative for money. Right?
They're off to get an inheritance from a dying relative, and they're pretty much awful people. And along the way, they encounter the craziest pileup car crash
In the history of cinema.
It's like the miles long backup car accidents, people dying, cars on fire. It's essentially a satire, a comedy, and it is the film. If you've ever heard me goof on the whole end of cinema kind of thing, this is the movie where at the end of the movie, Godard actually the closing credits say end of cinema.
Is that the one that opens with like a film found on the scrap heap or something? There's one of his movies that starts with that. I thought
maybe I've seen it twice. I'm going to watch it again because it's new. And so That'll remind me of the answer to the question you just asked that I cannot answer.
Well, and it's Criterion, so it's got tons of cool extras and, and interviews and whatnot. My DVD pick that's coming out on Tuesday is The Incredible Mel Brooks, An Irresistible Collection of Unhinged Comedy, which Shout Factory's putting out. They just did that Steve Martin box that was all of his... not all, but a lot of his television stuff. And it was a great mix of things. It was his TV specials, appearances from The Tonight Show, appearances on Saturday Night Live, just all these sort of wonderfully random things you never thought you'd see sort of collected together, done. And they've done the same thing with Mel Brooks. It's five DVDs and one CD. And it's got, Mel Brooks and Dick Cavett interviews. It's got Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner talking about The 2,000-Year-Old Man. There's a five-part documentary about his film career. Again, there's Tonight Show appearances. There's episodes of TV shows he created like Get Smart and When Things Were Rotten. And then a CD with comedy bits and songs from the films. There's a 60-page book featuring essays by Leonard Maltin and Gene Wilder, among other people. So if you are at all a Mel Brooks fan or have one on your Christmas list, this is one you'll want to check out.
Okay, letters from people. Last week we read John's top 10, and he also gave us his dog's top 10.
Oh, right, yes.
Now, we're not going to knife rate your dog. But here's the list.
Okay.
The Black Stallion.
Great.
Rabid.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Mother. Best in Show.
Are these all movies with dogs?
Lilies, yes. The Passion of Anna, Benny's Video, Enter the Void, Time to Leave, Syndromes in a Century, Humanité, Grizzly Man. So this is dogs.
Did you see Time to Leave?
No, I didn't.
Oh, it's really good. François was on film with Melville Poupeau.
We have a late Halloween list from James.
Oh, okay.
Did I already?
No. I thought we read his Halloween list.
We read his Halloween list, and he gave his Christmas list.
Which so we're saving.
We're saving the Christmas. Okay, yeah. I'm gonna pass through that one. Hang on. This is from Duncan. Hey, so Tank Girl is not a good movie. Well, but I love it because I have the feeling that Lori Petty and Madonna bonded during the previous A League of Their Own, and in Tank Girl, Petty is actually playing the character as Madonna. So it's truly the only glimpse of what a good Madonna movie would be like. The only one since, of course, Who's That Girl?
I was going to say.
All right, top 11 from Emilio. I hate making lists just for the fact that it is impossible for me to narrow down my favorite things when there are so many levels on which you can enjoy something. Very true.
Yes.
And that is why I have never on this show given you a list of my favorite movies.
Me neither. But how did this start?
At the end of the year, I suppose we should do that.
Well, a top 10 of the year, sure. Why did how did this even happen, this top 10 list?
It was an off-the-cuff comment I made. Send us your favorite list of favorite movies. Like,
and they did.
And now, now it's the Snowball Express of lists. So I'm just going to pick movies I relate to, made an impression on me when I was younger, or just still enjoy after many viewings, in no particular order. Jaws. Mm-hmm. Sparked my childhood obsession over sharks and made me put my hands in a shark fin position over my head and hum the theme every time I was in a pool with friends. Apocalypse Now. Drunken Martin Sheen doing judo over Jim Morrison. What more can you ask for?
There's an Apocalypse Now moment in Skyfall that's kind of cool.
Brick. Mm-hmm. Reminds me of my first broken heart, minus the murder and the noir. The Killing, the heist movie everyone rips off. Totally. Also Kubrick doing noir. Yes, please. Office Space, greatest mob hit scene ever. Barton Fink, I related to being a young idealist full of himself that thought he could change the world with ideas that surely had been already presented in the past and then face the harsh reality.
I will show you the life of the mind.
Taxi Driver, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Scott Pilgrim versus the World, Monty Python and the Holy Grail. P.S. I almost added Pulp Fiction, but I know Morocco Mole will knife me. He will unknife me.
That's right.
Someone knows you as Morocco Mole, which means
they've been paying attention.
They've been paying attention for a very long time.
Yes, or they read your book.
I'm gonna say this is 100% list.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. We got no. I mean, If you're going to put Pulp Fiction in it, you're going to make it knock down to 95.
He wisely eschewed it.
Yeah. I think now it's become a thing. I won't be surprised if in the future more and more people are putting Pulp Fiction on their list.
Just to mess with
you. Just to mess with you.
Fine. Yeah. Whatever.
Okay, here's the
list. I'm right.
Top 10 and stuff from... is there a name on this list? Gary. This is from Gary in Seattle. Hi, guys. Your podcast can never be too long.
Oh.
So thank you, Gary.
Thank you, Gary. Gary in Seattle. Gary in Seattle.
Okay, here's the top 10. Sorry. Shh. Ask me again next week and half of it will probably change in no particular order. Limelight.
Okay. Not my favorite. But
okay.
It's, you know, Pauline Kael, originally, her original claim to fame was writing a negative review of Limelight. Just saying.
The Blue Angel, the German version.
Yeah.
Vertigo, it's all about Midge.
Totally. I want that portrait.
Yeah.
Of, you know, Barbara Balgetty's head on the, you know.
2001,
mm-hmm.
The Empire Strikes Back,
mm-hmm.
Swimming with Sharks. Okay. That's a fun movie. Yeah.
Didn't we see that on a date?
You and me?
Yeah.
No.
No? No. I thought, okay.
No. Meet Me in St. Louis.
Ah, yes.
A Hard Day's Night.
Just sure.
Terrific. How to Marry a Millionaire.
Yeah, it's no Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, but it's, right. You know, it's good.
For me, Gentlemen Prefer Blondes is kind of a Christmas movie. I know it's not a Christmas movie, but I want to watch it at Christmas. I want to watch it in that space after Christmas, before New Year, when we don't have to go see any movies,
mm-hmm.
when I can sit around in the house in pajamas all day if I want on the couch.
And have cocoa.
And have cocoa.
Gentlemen for Blondes is nothing but joy.
Yeah.
That's why it feels
Christmas. I just read an amazing essay about it by Jonathan Rosenbaum.
Really?
Where he reviews it in so many ways. And we're going to have to watch it again after Christmas.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to read this thing to you out loud. And it's crazy. He's brilliant.
I've seen a feminist analysis of it in terms of
this how, is a different sort of feminist
how,
analysis.
How Monroe, how the Lorelai character kind of takes what is expected of her and sort of judos it against the men to get what she wants.
Yeah, he includes references to these feminist sort of critiques of the film, but then goes off in his own direction. It's really fascinating.
Okay.
And thank you, Gary. Desk Set, which is a Christmas movie for us in this house. We watch it every December. If you've never seen Desk Set, I just need to give a shout out to Desk Set because not enough people know about Desk Set.
Mm.
It is the most fun Spencer Tracy, Katharine Hepburn movie, in my opinion.
I think so.
My own personal pleasure, this is my favorite one. It's set at Christmas, they're at the office, it's this very sort of Mad Men kind of atmosphere, mm-hmm. where, you know, there's this crazy, wild, drunken office Christmas party, and they're falling in love, but she wants to maybe be married to this other guy, and there's big, giant computer going to come
the
along
size of a room.
Take out all their jobs, you know, so they're all worried about that. It's so awesome.
And it was written by Nora Ephron's parents.
Yes. All right. This is an email with a subject line. It's from Evan. And the subject line is, "How Knife Was My Valley." Distinguished gentlemen of the internet. After suffering a series of health setbacks and having a 5-year relationship crumble to dust,
ouch.
I have been forced to take a good hard look at my life. One question haunts me more than most. Exactly how knife is my top 10 movie list? I sent a version of this list in a few months ago, but it failed to surface during the freewheeling Dave White's Stalinist purge of the email backlog. Hopefully this version manages to find its way home. The following 10 movies aren't listed in any specific order of awesomeness or importance. I like you already, Evan.
Hey, that's a heck of an intro.
Number 1, The Shining.
Sure.
Number 2, Yojimbo.
Yojimbo.
Number 3, Harlan County, USA.
Ooh, yeah. Good one. People don't mention docs a lot, but that's a really good one.
I've noticed a surprising lack of documentaries in people's top 10 list. I've always found a great documentary to be extremely rewatchable, definitely. Even more so than my favorite dramas and comedies. Mm. Number 4, The Royal Tenenbaums. Mm. Number 6, The Big Lebowski. Okay. I mean, number 5 is The Big Lebowski. Number 6 is Aliens.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like Alien is probably the better film, but one of my earliest memories is watching Aliens in my grandparents' basement and being terrified of Jonesy the Cat when he hisses in that early dream sequence. Not the alien ripping out of Ripley's chest, the cat. So that has to count for something.
I saw Aliens in a theater in Atlanta that no longer exists that had what they called the largest screen in the South.
It was Terra?
No. It was a different one. It was downtown near the Fox.
Okay.
It was a 90-foot screen.
Whoa.
And my friend Kurt Holman and I went, and we got there like later than we wanted to. And so I sat in like the second row. Oh, my God. Go on.
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Okay.
Salesman.
Oh.
I haven't seen Salesman.
Oh, it's a good one.
Yeah.
It's the Maisels, right?
I think it is, yes. Yeah. They Live. It's terrific.
She's newly out on Blu-ray.
So here's the thing. I've seen They Live, but I haven't seen Salesman.
There's a new
so
collector's edition.
That's
now.
How skewed my life is. Number 10, In the Mood for Love.
Oh, perfection.
Tony Leung and Maggie Cheung are the most beautiful on-screen couple of all time, he says. And I think you're right.
I would. They're top 5, certainly.
Yeah, yeah. That's all for me. Thanks to the both of you for the free entertainment every week. It's not going to be free for long. You're going to start paying.
No, it's not.
I know you're going to. It's always going to be free. Yeah. I'll make sure to pick up Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas this year to balance the scales.
Hey now.
Sincerely, and we believe you.
Yes.
Evan.
He is a very sincere pumpkin patch. Evan, you are 100% nice.
Definitely. Yeah. This is not an email for the podcast. It's for us to read off the podcast.
Okay.
All right. Here we go.
Nigerian prince. We're going to make a lot of money out of
this. This is from Frank. Dear Alonzo and Dave, I love the podcast. For a while, I was commuting 3 hours every Monday morning, and your podcast was a godsend. In the words of America's Bernard Pivot, a.k.a. Wendy Williams, you are like friends in my head. Between my partner and me, we own all 3 of your books. Exile in Guyville, 101 Must-See Movies for Gay Men, and Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas. In fact, I plan to send a separate top 10 of Christmas movies at a later date in a particular order. Oh, okay, so he's all right. Here is my top 10 list. Number 1, All About Eve.
Yes.
Number 2, North by Northwest.
Sure.
Number 3, Hairspray, not the John Travolta version.
Okay.
Number 4, Laura, which is one of my very favorites.
Which we've talked about on the show.
Yeah,
recently,
yeah.
I think,
yeah.
Yes.
Great. Mildred Pierce, mostly because of Eve Arden.
Yes.
Rebecca, The Philadelphia Story.
Okay.
What's Up, Doc?
This is a great list.
Yeah. Well, The Letter.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Which I've never seen.
Oh, that's the Betty Davis shoots.
And The Heiress.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. He says, I know it's very heavy on women's pictures.
What
the heck? Finally, number 1 episode of The Munsters is the one where Lily dreams Herman becomes a 60s rock star.
Well,
we agree.
Settled that question.
Yeah. Thank you both for all you do of all the podcasts. I regularly listen to you guys are the most enjoyable and dependable.
Oh, well, thank you.
Frank from Indianapolis.
Frank, you are 100% nice.
Yeah, you are. And one more.
Okay.
This is from Matt. Hey, Dave and Rex Reed. Alonzo. Whoa!
What a burn.
Comedy. I love the podcast. My girlfriend and I listen to it every day. Here are my top 10
movies. Every day?
It says every day. Maybe they just repeat. Maybe they just keep listening to the same episode over and over and over again. Maybe they memorize it.
Whatever works for you.
Here's his top 10. There are 15 movies on this top 10 list.
Cheater.
Titus.
Oh, I love that movie.
Fantasia.
Oh, right. You know, I've gotten so used to Fantasia Burino. I forgot.
This is a pretty Fantasia. This is a big Fantasia Burino house. And,
I thought maybe he meant, you know, Fantasia Burino. Or no, yeah. Life is Not a Fairy Tale, the Fantasia Burino story on Lifetime.
Spirited Away.
Oh, yes.
Hamlet.
Which
we don't know which one he's talking about.
Which one?
American Beauty. How You Like Me Now, Alonso?
Yeah,
I'm with you. I was an early hater of American Beauty. Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
He goes, I like it better than How to Survive a Plague. Remember what I said 2 minutes ago? People are going to just start saying this just to screw with you. Well,
it's already happened.
It is happening.
You and me, we ain't friends. No, go on.
Good Night and Good Luck.
Okay.
The Dark Knight.
Okay.
Ed Wood. Lost in Translation.
Somebody likes some black and white movies. Yes, go on.
War Horse. You just made a horse noise.
Nay.
Amadeus.
Okay.
Brazil.
Yes.
The Blues Brothers.
Okay.
Here's his number one of the top 15. You're going to like this.
Oh, boy.
It's a Mad World.
Sure, you know, that's a movie I never meant much to me, but when I did finally get to see it at the Cinerama Dome, like in 70 or whatever,
right.
It was pretty rad.
Yeah. All right, we're done.
All right. That's it?
I got to get dinner in the
Do you need to knife him?
That's 100%. Well, not American Beauty.
No.
Because that sucks.
So you're still 90% knife.
A War Horse. Well, I guess you're 85 because he hates War Horse.
Yeah, well, I love War Horse. Fiction, but he gave us 15, so all the numbers are skewed, so who knows.
No, yeah,
we'll stick with 85. Okay. That worked.
You're 85, man. Yeah.
Watch it. All right. We thank you as always for listening. Check out our friends at the Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli, Fat Guys at the Movies, the Criterion Cast, Throwing Shade, Team Jack, the Schmoes Know, the B Movies Podcast, Film Spotting SVU, a Pod Crash with that Chris Gore, the Game Night Guys, Secretly Timid, and a new one I wanted to point out, Getting On with James Urbaniak. You may know James as the voice of Dr. Venture on the Venture Brothers, or from movies like American Splendor or Henry Fool. And he does these brilliant short monologues that are like great radio theater. And it's a terrific show. You can subscribe to it on iTunes. Check it out. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes, by the way, if you haven't already. And if you like the show, and we hope you do, leave us a review. It helps other people find us. You could also stream this program on Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com. We hope that you will like our Facebook page, the Linoleum Knife Podcast. You will follow us on Twitter, at LinoleumCast. Check into the show on GetGlue.com, although they have us listed as a TV show, whatever, it works. And you can always drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. You can send us your top 10 list, send us any questions or comments you have about the show. And if you are interested in purchasing an autographed copy of Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas.
And you are interested.
For yourself or for loved ones whose stockings you will be stuffing this holiday season. Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast.
This book is too big for a stocking.
Not necessarily.
This book is a real gift. This book is not a McDonald's gift certificates in denominations of 50 cents in a book that costs $5. This is a big book, a weighty book, an important book.
I think, actually, it's a book to give to somebody early in the Christmas season.
Yes, it is.
So that they can then enjoy it throughout December and watch holiday-related films.
That means right now.
But it also works as a Christmas present, however you want to do it. Anyway, if you would like to order a copy directly from the author.
And you do.
That would be me.
That's him.
And have it signed to you, or again, to whoever you are gifting this holiday season.
Unless you want me to sign it.
Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com, and we will tell you how to make that happen.
Bye now.
And
goodbye.